Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or underwriters to this station.
From KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain, California, this is Community Works Radio. I'm Ellen Sugg. Community Works Radio is a locally produced show that focuses on people who work for the common good in their communities. People who join in KKRN's mission of fostering positive social change and healthy communities. When it comes to the Earth's precious resources, I would venture to say that none is more significant than the water we drink and use. Water is the lifeblood of our planet, and we are becoming increasingly aware of the need to take care of it and the possibility of facing severe shortages of clean water in these times of drought and other climate change phenomena. Today, I will be talking with members of local community groups in Mount Shasta, California, about their work to protect water resources in their community and beyond. We will have three guests. Two of them are members of a group called Water. We Advocate Through Thorough Environmental Review, which is a group of Mount Shasta area citizens who are concerned about maintaining a healthy environment and a desirable community to live in. Water has as its mission the goal of monitoring various development project applications. It also intends to educate the public about environmental issues of local importance, and that's what we're hoping to do today, give them a chance to do that. They are also joined by a member of Gateway Neighborhood Association, and who is also part of the whole project. So I would now like to welcome my three guests today. Good morning, Bruce Hillman.
Good morning, Ellen.
And Raven Stevens.
Hey, Ellen, good morning.
Good morning. And Rosalind McCoy.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you guys so much for taking the time. I'd like to start with Bruce Hillman. Bruce is a resident of Mount Shasta and a community activist. He's a member of Siskiyou Progressive Alliance and Water, and also an avid hiker. And Bruce, I would like you to start out by talking about the people that are involved in what you're doing up there in Mount Shasta and a little bit of the history.
Great. Well, thank you so much for helping us out with this, Ellen. And yes, the Water Group actually got started back in last fall in 2013 when we saw in the local newspaper that the plant, that the empty Dannon Coca-Cola plant had been sold to Crystal Geyser. And this was the first that most of us in the entire area had heard of this project and this new reopening of the plant. And we then began to do a lot of research trying to find out what was happening here. And, you know, it was very difficult sometimes to get a lot of information. But basically, we found that Crystal Geyser, which is a subsidiary of Osaka Pharmaceutical Corporation, had bought the empty plant and was planning to reconvert the plant from what used to be a water bottling plant and convert it into a production facility for fruit-flavored drinks, flavored teas, and different other types of fruit-flavored beverages. And this was a real shock to many in the neighborhood that they would think they could just reopen this without having an environmental impact report. And as we began to study this, we looked into the history of the plant, you know, what was happening there in the past, and trying to find out what Crystal Geyser's plans were for the future. And one of our first interesting documents we were able to get a hold of was the economic development grant that the city got because the new plant production being proposed by Crystal Geyser would require a sewer hookup to the city's water waste treatment plant, because with the fruit sludge and the different manufacturing byproducts from their bottle washing and fruit juice mixing, they would have enough waste treatment product that would require going through to the city treatment system. In the past, when the plant was owned by Dannon and Coca-Cola, they just bottled water, and it took their wastewater and poured it out into leach fields behind the plant. But now that they've added this extra manufacturing process, it requires hookup to the city sewer system. And then they were also planning major electrical upgrades and a number of different changes, basically rebuilding the entire production facility because the old plant had been emptied out from the previous owners.
And Bruce, just to interject for a question for a minute, exactly where is the plant located?
Well, the plant is located just north of the city limit of Mount Shasta. It's directly adjacent to the city limits, but the plant itself is actually in county property.
Okay, thank you.
And, I mean, that was actually one of the big issues that then came up, because the plant is located on county property, or at least the vast majority of their property is, and the plant itself. And so a number of us went to the county board of supervisors and requested that they require an environmental impact report, given that this was a major change in the operations of the plant. And the county came back and basically said that they had no discretionary authority in this issue, and that the old agreements with Dannon and Coca-Cola could be grandfathered in with the new operation of this plant. And we really see that this is a very different type of plant. I mean, you know, just for the example of needing an entire $6 million sewer hookup to be able to begin operations. And so we've been insisting that the county, you know, require an EIR before this plant goes forward. Now, they've sort of stepped away and washed their hands of the whole operation, although we're really hoping we can pressure and convince and make them see the error of their ways. But the next operation, the next point that we need to consider here is then the role of the city of Mount Shasta, because it is involved in building and maintaining the new sewer line connecting the plant with the waste treatment facilities, which then flow, the exit from the waste treatment plant then flows right into the Sacramento River. So we think that with the city having control over the hookup to the sewer system or the waste treatment plant, we think that the city should take responsibility and have an environmental impact report, not just on building the new sewer, but also on the plant that will be hooking up to that sewer and the issues around the types of chemicals and waste treatment that will be flowing out of the sewage system, you know, from the industrial waste byproducts of Crystal Geyser's operations. And all of these things to us indicate, you know, that this is has a potential severe environmental impacts on the area with their increased use of well water, with the manufacturing of plastic bottles, with the increased truck traffic through the area, with the issues of noise and odors from the plant operations, the lighting and the aesthetics of the entire plant. All of these issues to us really indicate why we need an environmental impact report. An environmental impact report that we can really see what the problems with this plant will be here and what we can do to mitigate them.
Yes, it certainly sounds like it's not just the same plant. It's going to be creating a lot, even more difficulties or challenges than the water bottling plant. And I want to just take a minute to let people know that you're listening to KKRN Community Radio, and this is Community Works Radio, and we're interviewing today some of our neighbors and activists from Mount Shasta who are members of Water and the Gateway Neighborhood Association. And that's what we're talking about now, is the possibility of a crystal geyser plant moving back into Mount Shasta. So, Bruce, do you want to go on with talking about the other people that are involved in this?
Yeah, I mean, our community here is really mobilized around trying to find out what the impact of this plant is going to be and what we can do to make sure that this doesn't really harm the environment of not only the Mount Shasta area, but everyone downstream, because Mount Shasta is located, right on the headwaters of the Sacramento River, and downstream from us is basically the entire Sacramento watershed. So,
yes,
we've been having an amazing outpouring of support, not only the activists that have gathered together to be part of the We Advocate Thorough Environmental Review Group, but, other concerned citizens have come out to the city council meetings. Members of the Winnemem Wintu tribe have been very active in their concerns about this area. And, they consider the water of Mount Shasta to be sacred to their whole heritage. We have the local Gateway Neighborhood Association, which is the neighborhood association of all the homes surrounding the Crystal Geyser plant. The Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center has been active in fundraising and in getting people informed and involved in this project. The Siskiyou Progressive Alliance, a local progressive political organization of which I'm also a member, has been mobilizing our people to get behind this movement and this concern about this plant. And then also people like from the Sierra Club have been coming up and helping us with this project. So it's been quite an amazing outpouring of support and concern from the entire community.
Sounds like a great coalition. Now, about how many people show up at your big events, like going to the city council, et cetera?
Well, we had over 200 people showed up at the April 24th city council meeting. They had a city council meeting which was the first time that there was going to be some discussion and presentation of what Crystal Geyser's plans really were. And we can talk about that a little later.
We
but
will.
A lot of people really showed up, and we passed out about 150, and then we ran out of our information brochures to everyone.
That's
there.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
So, I'm not surprised that it's an issue that a lot of people are concerned about, because it's so vital.
I wanted to give just a little background also about the history of this plant, because, one of the things that both Dan, that Crystal Geyser and the county keep countering is that this is just a continuation of previous use of this building. And we had to go into emergency research mode, and we're getting, all the old emails from the county supervisors about this and researching environmental law and looking at the past history of this plant. And found out that, the old Dan and Coke plant was first proposed in 1997, and Dan and then went into some negotiations with the community and with the county on getting this plant built in the first place. And they put a very rosy spin on what they were planning to do then, and they basically said that the plant would be, you know, protected from view because it's a huge plant that is visible from the entire, from the surrounding hilltops. And if you drive by it, it's, you know, several city blocks long and surrounded by a metal fence. And the Dannon originally said that they would set this back from the road. They would mitigate the views and try and control lighting and noise. And we found that basically the old plant, every promise that was made was broken. That, you know, all of their issues of how they were going to situate the building of the plant itself changed from when they were proposing it to the community and to the environmental.
Were they called to task on it, Bruce? Did anybody
object?
Well,
they never were. The county refused to do anything about that, even though there were numerous complaints from different people. The county just basically washed its hands. And eventually, they even said, well, you know, we had this mitigated declaration, but we don't really have any authority to do it, and basically pushed it off to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. You know, so the county is, you know, I think really negligent on their responsibility. And, I mean, my personal view is I think that many of the Board of Supervisors in Siskiyou County have never met an extractive industry they don't like.
Yeah.
You know, and...
that's sad.
They, I think they're... they have this, I think, you know, they don't have, I think, have the long-term environmental interests of our county at heart.
Unfortunately, and, that seems to be a pattern in so many of these cases. It happens to us in Shasta County around clear-cutting, for example, where, you know, there's all these regulations that are supposed to be followed, and when they aren't followed, nobody in power does anything about it.
And that's one of the things we've, you know, found in researching this, that the past mitigations agreements where they said, well, we'll do this, we'll landscape this plant, we'll set it back from the road, we'll put the narrow edge facing this, we'll make sure that the neighbors don't have the view of this entire huge industrial building from their windows. None of those things were done, or they were done in sort of a totally token, like they were supposed to put a wall of trees between the street and the plant. And they put these little deciduous trees that were never watered very much, about 20 feet apart. So they have these little scraggly trees, and that was the one thing they did to try and block the view of this huge, you know, story and a half tall warehouse size building.
So just to try to move you along on the history, how long did the plant actually operate, and then what other significant things happened?
Well, the plant opened in 2000 and continued. Then in about 2005, Dannon sold it to Coca-Cola. And then Coca-Cola closed the plant for business reasons in 2008.
2010, Bruce.
2010? Okay,
November 2010, yeah.
Okay.
They closed the plant. And then it had been empty for the last 3.5 or so years.
Okay.
And when they closed it, they stripped out all of the manufacturing lines and their bottle manufacturing and their bottling plant stuff and sold that. So it's been basically an empty building. Yeah, and, you know, there's an immense amount of, you know, and we're probably overloading people with a lot of facts. But if people are interested to find out a lot more, you know, the Water Group has a website.
Good. Why don't you give that out?
Which is the groupspaces.com. That's groupspaces, one word, .com/waters. Just W-A-T-E-R-S.
And I did check it out. It's filled with information. Good place to go. So we'll repeat that. groupspaces.com/waters.
Correct.
Okay, you're listening to KKRN Community Radio, Bella Vista, located in Round Mountain. This is Community Works Radio. Today we're talking with some of our neighbors from Mount Shasta about a project that they're working on, trying to monitor and the potentially new Crystal Geyser bottling plant that's they're trying to open there. So now we're going to speak with local landowner Raven Stevens, also of Mount Shasta, and she is handling the coordination of groundwater monitoring and is assisting with the testing. She's a member of the Gatewood Neighborhood Association and is their community liaison. So welcome, Raven.
Hi, Ellen. How you doing?
Just fine. And you're going to be talking about the hydrology of
this.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very complex issue out here. And as you all are certainly aware, that Mount Shasta is a volcanic area. Mount Shasta itself is not a dormant volcano. It's still considered to be an active volcano. And one of the issues that we have to deal with up here is that down in the Central Valley, you have what we call groundwater basins. So in other words, you have underwater, if you kind of think of it as an underwater lake, that people draw their water from when they
right.
have wells.
Right, well water.
So up here, we don't have that. What we have is volcanic rock that is broken, fractured, old lava flows, lava tubes, giant boulders, and so there is no place for a groundwater to actually, if you think of it as like an underwater lake. Up here, it's more of a moving flow of water from the top of Mount Shasta, and as it melts, it sinks right down in very, very quickly, so you rarely ever see a water flow on the surface level as a stream. And the water flows underneath, and it flows down the flanks of Mount Shasta. It comes out in a bunch of various springs where water bubbles up, and
right.
also flows right down into Lake Siskiyou and right directly into the Sacramento River. So we are basically at the headwaters here.
Right.
We are the source of the water. So what we have up here is when you have the problem of the county not wanting to take responsibility and step up and be the lead agency. Basically, they're shirking their responsibilities, and they left it kind of in the hands of the Regional Quality Water Board, which their forte is effluent, the back end of a plant, so to speak.
What
not
goes
the water
out. The water that goes
out. What comes out.
Right, the water
That's
that goes
right.
out.
That's right. And, you know, down in Redding, they're used to groundwater basins. So really, the mindset is about groundwater basins, not volcanic. So when you're looking at this type of extractive industry, there hasn't been any kind of real strong monitoring systems in place and or no mitigations at all in regards to water extraction, triggers and responses for precipitation or lack of precipitation. We all know we're in an extreme drought right now, and Crystal Geyser has every intention of coming in and pumping as much water as they want to without anybody telling them what they can and cannot do. So,
and that's quite a huge amount, right, that they're planning to use?
Well, they won't actually fully disclose what they're telling. What they're telling the public is minimal numbers based on nobody's forced. See, a CEQA document or a full EIR would force them to disclose how much they're going to pump at full build-out. In other words, as big as their plant is projected to be, how much will they pump? What they're telling the public is what they're going to pump with one line in production and then with two lines in production. And we believe that they have the capacity to have somewhere between 7 and 10 lines.
Wow.
Yeah, they have.
And the previous plant had just one?
No, they had
two,
okay.
Yeah, they had two production lines. And so we know within that building that's there, they have the ability to have three production lines in, but they're simply not disclosing it. And what the Gateway Neighborhood Association is focusing on, we're a group of homeowners that live around the plant.
Right.
We don't feel like the county is taking into consideration the residents that live here. This entire area surrounding the plant is filled with homes, single-family,
wow.
you know, unit homes. And that gets into some of the zoning issues that we can talk about later. But we just simply do not feel that the county is taking into consideration families that have lived here for decades, that have had wells, that, you know, in essence didn't have much of an issue until Coca-Cola took over from Dannon and started pumping unrestricted amounts. And so the Gateway Neighborhood Association, we've taken it upon ourselves to start our own groundwater monitoring program. And what we're doing is we're monitoring private wells surrounding the plant, and we're documenting that. We're using
And what exactly are you looking for when you monitor? Are you talking about levels of water?
Yes, groundwater level. And so when a well is put in, the well driller will have a well completion report, and that will tell us where the historic groundwater level was back when the well was drilled, okay?
Yes.
And then, and so wells were drilled, you know, at various times, and we have documentation for all these wells. And then what we do is we have current data, and what we have found is that from the time, well, we have about 1985 through the present, 2014, and we've found on average the groundwater levels have dropped 13.5 feet in most of the neighbors' wells.
My goodness.
And that's an average, yeah. And that's an average. Some one well is down 63 feet.
Wow.
And then another well is up 5 feet. So you can see that we have a lot of different variety in the groundwater levels all over the area, and that's because we're in a fractured lava area. So the monitoring here and the issues that we're concerned with really are the proper mitigations that we feel if the company's going to be here, we need independent monitoring of neighbors' wells in case we have issues when the company is pumping. We need monitoring of the company's wells, of the headwaters area, and to take into account what we call triggers and responses. In other words, if we're in an extreme drought, the company will have to, by order, pump less.
Right.
So that the neighbors are not affected.
Well, that makes sense. And could you repeat how long you've been doing the monitoring? When did you start it?
We started the monitoring just last year in 2013, and we're about to do our third test this month. We'll be testing groundwater again May 19th.
Okay,
and
great.
We're checking those levels. And this is a total voluntary program of neighbors in the area. And, so that's what we're up to.
Okay, very interesting, and thank you, Raven. So this is just about halfway through, so we're going to take a short interlude of music, and we will be back with you in just a minute. Well, welcome back to Community Works Radio. We are talking today with our neighbors from Mount Shasta, California, about a project that they're working on around water in their community. We've already heard from Bruce Hillman and Raven Stevens, and now I would like to introduce Rosalyn McCoy. Rosalyn has been a Mount Shasta resident since 1989, and she's a member of the Siskiyou Progressive Alliance and Water. We advocate thorough environmental review, and she's also a court-appointed special advocate volunteer assisting foster children. So welcome, Rosalyn, and I think we're today that you're going to give us some information about the legal aspects of this whole project.
Thank you very much for having us on today.
Oh, you're welcome.
So the CEQA environmental report will partially be performed by the city, and under the EDA grant, it is required for expanding the sewer line. And they are still looking at, will this investigation also incorporate the Crystal Geyser plant expansion. And we're currently waiting for that decision, which could possibly bring the whole environmental review for the entire project triggering that. And if the city does not require that full investigation, then we will be back to the county as the lead agency, and that Mount Shasta would be considered a responsible agency, because there is a number of discretionary acts that the city must engage in, such as monitoring the effluent, the sewage release into our system. And currently, our sewer plant and the sewer receptor lines are not capable of handling the quantity of effluent that is being proposed. And so that is the reason why this needs to happen prior to the plant opening. So the city went to the economic development and requested a grant. And in this grant, they stated that Crystal Geyser was going to be requiring 1 million gallons of water a day. And so we've been basing a lot of our calculations off of what was being presented to the federal government in this grant application. In the grant application, they were alleging that there would be from 150 to 200 jobs being created at this plant. And knowing that much of the plant is automated, this would really lead people to believe that their intent is to expand the size of the existing building. And I have seen a number of emails between the county and Crystal Geyser laying drawings out or proposals of expanding the existing building, which is basically just a shell, 60 feet to the east, and then another addition to the south.
So
which would... Go ahead.
Well, just to clarify, so the city of Mount Shasta is going to the economic development, is it an agency, to ask for money to help support this plant? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. They named Crystal Geyser as the primary beneficiary of this grant. And they also stated to the EDA that there was plans to expand the local hospital as beneficiary from this. But then we contacted the hospital, and they stated that there is no plans whatsoever for an expansion. And actually, they have closed down parts of the hospital.
It
became smaller.
Is it the city council that makes the decision to go for the grant?
Yes. And the city manager.
Wow. So they're basically saying it'll be a good thing, and they want money to do it. Is that right?
Well, they're stating that it will bring in economic development here.
Yes.
That it will create jobs. But we have found out that Crystal Geyser is planning on closing plants in Bakersfield and Valencia, and that they stated that they have a very high retention policy, which would indicate that they would be planning on moving a population up here to take these jobs.
So it won't
be proposing on creating.
Right. So you're not necessarily going to get new jobs for people that are already here. Or
that's correct. And then it will cause more of a shortage for housing and make it more difficult for low-income people to find affordable housing.
Amazing. Really, it seems like there's so many it is such a complex issue on every level. So,
well, and Ellen, this is Raven.
Yes.
The point of the EDA grant is that Crystal Geyser is going to donate $3 million towards this new sewer line. And the other $3 million is going to be matching grant by this EDA grant.
I see.
So that it's a $6 million total project.
But the main point of the having a better sewer line is so that the Crystal Geyser plant will have a place to put all of the stuff that it has to get rid of.
And there has been a moratorium here of any development because the line existing today is substandard.
Oh boy!
So there has been an ongoing need for this expansion of the sewer line, but yet we need to do it in a conscious, knowledgeable way.
Goodness. Okay, so let's see, just to sort of look at the overall thing, what is it exactly that your groups want from the city? How could, you know, what is it that you see would be a way out of this issue or would make it better? Raven, could you talk about what you want from the powers that be here?
Yes. Well, we'd like to look at the entire project, not just the effluent sewer end. We want to look at the project as a whole. So water extraction, water use, they're going to be using, you know, as much water per day, or more water per day than all the homes surrounding the plant. So what we want to look at is a full EIR, a full scope of the project.
And an EIR is an environmental impact report. So that's
environmental impact report. It's part of the California law, which is called CEQA. And it's put into place for projects like this, not only to protect the environment, but to look at the full scope of a project so that you can figure out what the damages are going to be, because there always are costs to putting something like this in. So they want to look at what are the damages and how do they mitigate those damages. So how do they try to fix the problem or
offset it,
make it so that it's not so bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, we want the city to expand the scope of the EIR from just the sewer line to becoming a full EIR, looking at all aspects. And we've requested this verbally of the city continuously. We've done it from the county. And if we don't get it from either one of them, we'll have to take the next steps that we have to take to make sure this happens.
I have a couple of questions for you, and maybe any of you could answer it. Why is it that there's so much coming out of the plant? You know, when a lay person looks at it, so they're going to take water to make beverages. Why doesn't it just end up in the bottles and get, you know, shipped away? Why does it have to come out? Why does so much of the water have to come back into the sewer system?
Well, most of the water bottling industry itself is about a 3-to-1 margin. So it takes 3 gallons of water to make 1 gallon of water.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so take those numbers in for a second.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a lot of water. Now, this isn't going to be a water bottling plant. This is actually a plant that is going to, but it's still the same thing. They're going to be having to rinse bottles out either by water or by air, and then they're going to be filling those bottles. And when they fill the bottles, they're mixing them. They're going to be making Tajava up here and the Juicy Juice products, apparently, Metro Mint. So they're going to be mixing concentrations of those products in with water and then bottling them. And then there's the pulp and the effluent that they can't just dump into a leach field.
Okay.
So that goes straight into our aquifer. So it has to go into wastewater treatment.
Okay, thank you for that. And just I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to KKRN Community Radio, and today on Community Works Radio, we're talking with our neighbors from Mount Shasta about water plant that is attempting to go in there, and what these concerned citizens are doing about it and helping us understand it and know all the issues. It's a very complex issue, but one that is so important because water is so important. The other question I had is if one of you could summarize the negative impacts that you're worried about if the plant does go in. I mean, obviously it's the water that's coming out of the ground and the water that's going back into the sewer, but are there other impacts that you're worried about from the plant being there?
Well, this is Bruce. I think, and other people should add to what I may leave out here, but some of the impacts, I mean, first of all, what we've talked a lot about is just, you know, the impact of the huge amount of water extraction. You know, they have one large well that they're going to be their production well, but they have several other wells also available. And without an environmental impact report, there is really no limit beyond just their promises on what amount of water they will eventually be extracting from these wells.
Right.
You know, they say now it will be a small amount based on one or two lines, but plans can change with a click of a computer mouse, and there's really no limits unless there's an EIR.
So you're also worried about the limits, but what I was
right.
asking is, are there other things besides the income and
right.
the outgo
the
of the water?
The other issue is the truck traffic. I mean, how much truck traffic? I mean, right now, at their minimal amount, they're saying there's going to be up to like 50 trucks a day coming in and out of the plant. And, there's the issue of, and we've gotten some promises, although nothing is in writing, that they will not be going through the downtown area, but there's still the issue of this amount of truck traffic on the north end of Mount Shasta's access roads to the freeway.
That could be a lot, and they also don't have a good record of being honest about what it really is going to be, apparently.
They do not, at least, the previous companies. Then the other issues that we're concerned about is they're planning to manufacture plastic bottles there, and what that happens with the manufacturing of plastic bottles and what happens to the wash water and the chemicals that might be in the wash water from plastic bottle manufacturing.
Right. Not to
and
even...
And the odors that we know that will be coming from, heating plastic pellets and, thermoforming plastic bottles. In the past, there's been, when it was operated under Danone and Coca-Cola, there was very bad noise coming from that plant. It operated 24 hours a day with large compressors and air conditioning units on the roof and truck traffic at all hours, and it causes quite a lot of noise pollution.
Okay.
As well as, we're out here in the countryside, and dark skies are very treasured here, and one of the reasons a lot of people like it is there's not a lot of light pollution. And they painted the building white and lots of outside lights. So
right.
there's all sorts of different issues around just the whole operation of the plant and what that means for the aesthetics and the environment here, not just the water extraction and the water waste.
All right. Okay. Do any of you others have other negative impacts that you're worried about?
This is Rosalind. And they're talking about truck traffic at a minimal level right now, the 30 to 50 truck a day. But when they have the second, third lines and potentially more, how many trucks are we talking about? And this will be coming, turning on and off Mount Shasta Boulevard. There isn't any lights or any kind of control in that area, which could cause accidents and make that a very dangerous area. And the employees that are driving into the plant have to travel on a very small road that is basically designed as a neighborhood road. and they're not even really looking at that type of impact, that there's children and bikes on that road and this increased traffic from employees that could be, what, from the EDA grant up to 200 employees coming in and out of there, which would create a lot of traffic.
That could be a big change for that community. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So
we're also, and this is Raven, we're also looking at the impacts of neighborhood wells.
Okay, right. As you mentioned, you're monitoring those, and they could get worse.
And we did have, during the height of Coca-Cola pumping, there were well issues that were monitored by the Regional Quality Water Board and were not taken care of because they were looking through that lens of a groundwater basin as opposed to our volcanic area. And so there are no mitigations or anything in place to take care of local neighbors when their wells go dry. Last time this happened, they basically put the responsibility right back on the people, and they had to take care of it. It's just wrong.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thought I lost you for a minute. Okay, so, I see that there are plenty of factors here that make you want to get up and do things. So why don't you tell us, Bruce, what are things that listeners can do to support what you're doing in water and the Gatewood Neighborhood Association and in Mount Shasta? What can people do that are listening and would like to do something, and what activities are going on, what contacts, et cetera?
Right. Well, first of all, I think it would be important, this is a complex issue, is to visit the website, which is groupspaces.com/waters, and you can find, all of the information there on our homepage and the information page about the issue and described in much more detail than we can go over today. You can also volunteer project of involved neighbors and concerned citizens of the area, and we've got a lot of hosting issues and publications. We've been putting out flyers and newsletters, and in the future there may be lots of legal costs. So you can make a donation at the donate button at groupspaces.com/waters. We also on that site have access to a petition. We're putting a petition out that has gotten hundreds and hundreds of signatures of local people. You can download the petition and pass that to your neighbors and friends. And then there is at the home page of the water thing, there is where you can contact. There's an email to send us an email if you want to get further updates that are happening. And there's also a news and announcements link there where you can see, like, we were just had an interview on KPIX TV in San Francisco that aired, I think, last night. And we're also planning in the future to be going to different city council meetings and Board of Supervisors meetings. So if you get on our mailing list, we can let you know about that. And
do you get on the mailing list at the website also?
Yes, there is. You can contact the it says contact the manager of this group, and that will send us an email, and we can get you on the list.
Okay, great. So that is groupspaces.com/waters, W-A-T-E-R-S. Is there a phone number contact at all?
We do not currently have a phone number.
Okay, so you go to the website, and that will be people's access to know more about your issue and to find out how to participate and to donate to your good work.
And we also have a Facebook page.
Oh, great! What's that called?
We Advocate Thorough Environmental Review.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, well, it's been really interesting and great to have you guys on today, and I've learned a lot about the issue of water bottling plants, and I just am impressed with what you're doing and want to thank you for your work in the community. And if any of you have any final word that you would like to say, that would be fine.
Yeah, Ellen, this is Raven. I just think that in general, what I know of all the people that are stepping forward because they care is that we feel like we have a special responsibility being at the headwaters of the main artery of the Sacramento River here. And we take that special responsibility quite seriously. And so that's why we are doing what we're doing.
Great.
We thank all the listeners for their good wishes, and in any way that they can give us support, a $5 donation will help. Trust me.
We understand that, certainly. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, thank you, Bruce, Roslyn, and Raven. And I want to let you know you've been listening to KKRN Community Radio, 88.5 FM. We are listener-supported and volunteer-based radio by and for the community, and we welcome your participation. Become a volunteer or a listener supporter. You can go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, 96065. You can also call 337-1101 to learn more about KKRN Community Radio, or if you have follow-up questions about this interview. We also are on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. Thanks again to our neighbors from Mount Shasta and Water and the Gatewood Neighborhood Association, Bruce, Raven, and Roslyn, for giving up your time today to talk to me at Community Works Radio. And I also thank you, the listeners, for listening to Community Works Radio on KKRN. If you would like to talk about your community organization and work, please call me at the KKRN Business Line, 337-1101. I hope you'll turn in the first Tuesday of each month to hear your neighbors tell us about the good work they're doing for the benefit of all of our communities. Coming up next on KKRN is Lost and Found with Don Fennell, so stay tuned for some great music with Don, Undercurrents, The Stone Age, and Liquid Lights Radio later this afternoon. Also, I want to remind you that Training Easy with Willie will be on at this time next Tuesday, and in the meantime, remember, it's gonna take us all.
We need the Buddhists and the Baptists, Quakers and Catholics too, the atheists and agnostics, Muslims and Jews. We need people of all nations, all colors and all creeds, to put an end to war now, put an end to greed. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all.
Okay, guys, that's it.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Thanks, Ellen.
Hey, yeah, I hope it'll be okay and be good. Thank you. And
yeah, I think you know, just take out a couple of our little stumbles or something. And I
yeah,
think
exactly.
Pretty...
Yeah.
I've been keeping notes.
I don't have you on, Dickie. Go again. Say it again.
I've been keeping notes.
Okay, good. Well, anyway, it is interesting, and I do think it's really great that you're doing it. So thank you, and I'll talk to you later. And you can listen. It's going to be aired tomorrow morning at 8.
Eight a.m. So we can go to KKRN and listen
yeah,
to the stream.
Yeah, there's streaming there. It's kkrn.org, or take a ride in your car.
Is there a way to get a copy of it?
Well, yes. You know, that's one of my problems. I do have a recording of it now. In fact, I can turn it off.